We've all seen the incredible horse and rider combinations as the backbone of our sport. But what about everything else that makes the equestrian world tick? From the everyday grind to the world-class professional, join the Equestrian Podcast as we talk about every equestrian discipline in a way that hasn't been done before. Now here's your host, rider, trainer, and influencer behind my equestrian style, Bethany Lee.
Hey friends, and welcome back to the Equestrian Podcast. I'm your host, Bethany Lee, and this is episode 401. Our guest today is an accomplished Irish show jumper, really known for his remarkable success in the competitive arena as well as his horsemanship. He has recently won two consecutive World Cup qualifiers, and I really think that he has an amazing chance to represent Ireland in the upcoming 2024 Olympic Games. In this episode, we really dive deep into his journey, exploring his approach to training, horsemanship, and the road to the Olympics. So without further ado, please welcome our guest today, Richard Howley.
Hi, Richard.
Hello. Hi, how are you doing?
Doing well. How are you?
Yes, very well.
Awesome. Thank you so much for taking the time. I'm excited to hear a bit of the winding road that got you to where you are today. But first, tell me how you got started in the horse world.
I was very young. I was lucky enough to grow up on a farm. My father was quite a successful cattle dealer, and my mother was a nurse. So I was surrounded by animals and taking care of them. So I guess riding my ponies and all of that kind of just came from there, really being around animals at a very young age.
Yeah.
And yeah, all my sisters rode, so it was a big family. We all rode.
Awesome. At what point were you, you know, thinking, okay, this is just like a fun thing to do with my sisters, like I enjoy it, to, oh, I could see myself having this be a really big part of my life?
I think when I qualified for the under 10 final, actually, it was a big national championships at that time. And we were maybe not the wealthiest people going to the show. So we all kind of rocked on our dad's truck, which is a cattle truck. So we went with our one pony, and we did well. And that gave me the real hunger to believe that we could do it, even though it was at such a small young age. Mm. We never feared anybody from the show and from the shows after that, really. We always went to try and do our best. Even if that wasn't good enough, we tried our best.
Yeah.
Every week.
So cool. You've had such a remarkable journey in the equestrian industry. What are some, if you had to kind of like pick out any pivotal moments or experiences that you feel like were really big parts or kind of shaped your career as a professional rider?
I mean, going through the motions of being very successful in ponies, which in Ireland is a big industry up to 16, then to go straight back to, mucking out stables and completely stripping yourself of any bit of success you've had, to working again from the bottom to try and get back to where you were at 16, and to do that for the next 3 years, which I did, and loved every minute of it. I went to work for my mentor, and someone who I idolized as a rider was Michael Whitaker, and I spent 3 years there with him. And again, when you start there at Michael's, you know, he had so many fantastic riders go through his stable.
Oh yeah.
And they all developed to have great careers after. But yeah, I was lucky enough to have the opportunity to go there and start from the bottom, from mucking out to getting to go to compete at 3-star shows within 3 years. It was a very great opportunity and a chance for me to gain experience and learn from a phenomenal horseman.
Definitely.
And I think that was a big help and understanding for me, transition between the ponies, from taking it all away from the success away from me, and then getting a glimpse of it back. And he was a huge help to me.
Wow, that's amazing. I know, I remember reading somewhere that you broke your back at a really young age, which must have been so challenging. What happened, and how do you
feel like that experience influenced your maybe like perspective on your approach to training and horsemanship in general?
When it happened was when I was that's actually how I ended up leaving Michael's. We were breaking in a young horse, and just as you would in the indoor and getting going, and first time on the back and whatever. Normally I broke hundreds of horses and no end, and even now we still would. But yeah, I enjoy it, and I enjoy spending time with the really young ones. But at that point, the stirrup pin in the saddle broke, and as the horse was bronking around the indoor, the pin snapped. So I was with one stirrup and rodeoing around the arena, and the saddle slipped up the neck. With one stirrup, I didn't seem to have much of a chance. Anyway, I got catapulted
Oh
on my
gosh.
head and crushed my L2 and L3 vertebrae off each other. So that was not great outcome, but. I ended up in a wheelchair for 6 weeks, and then a slow build back up to riding again from there.
Wow.
But that at that point, I was going out with my now wife, Morgan, at that time, and she thankfully put her arm around me and looked after me for them few months where I was,
Wow.
yeah, quite. Not able to do so much, quite in a bad way. So, and that is the only reason at that time why I left Michael's. It wasn't even a decision that I went to go and do better things. It was just I wasn't able to do my job for that time. But himself and his wife Melissa were fantastically supportive of me, and even now still are, and we have a great relationship, which is, I think, for any young person who works for somebody and who has good respect for them, always, if you ever want to leave or take the next chapter in your life, always leave it in a good way so you can always stay friends and stay learning from the people who you once had or probably always had a lot of respect for.
Yeah, that's great advice. What did it look like for your not just career, but like your mindset on your career and the horses while you were recovering? Was there ever a moment where you're like, huh, like maybe I should do something else, or was it always just as soon as I can get back to riding again, I'm going to?
Yeah, I never questioned whether I was going to ride again.
Yeah.
I think for me, it was probably the turning point of me understanding what way I was going to approach riding when I got back in the saddle.
Okay.
I learned so much from not being able to ride and having to observe, having to take the step back, having to stand at the sideline without any option of I could do this or I could do that. It was just I had to watch what it was in front of me. And I really figured out somehow, it's hard to say it, but somehow I figured out the way I was going to come back was through particularly getting my horses riding very well. And then obviously different things I took from different riders and still do and still try and learn off every rider. But I found my way that I was going to approach when I got back in the saddle, and I think not being able to ride made it clearer for me to understand it.
Yeah, I think that that's great. What did you learn about the power of observing, versus being in the saddle during that time? What were some, I guess, like takeaways or specifics that you feel like you learned?
I think you sometimes when you're riding, you can get emotional that you can't do it, and almost you feel like you're banging a head against a wall sometimes.
Sure.
Yourself, and you can see some people to do it so easy, and for you it's so hard. But I think for me at that time, that was something that I understood because I wasn't able to ride, and I, yeah, just kept watching good riders, kept trying to educate myself in the right way to learn from them, and yeah, I don't know, just a penny dropped for me today. And when I got back on, I went about it a maybe different way, and I my way has never changed. I've never gone left or right. I've stuck to the system that I believe in, the routines that I know, And of course, we can always do better. But you know, I've never lost faith in good disciplined work. Work the horse as well, not too hard, but little and often I find is better, and stick to the routine so the horse can understand what you're asking him to do. And for me, that worked.
Definitely. I feel like horsemanship is definitely a big part of your business. Before we dive further into horsemanship, I'd love for you to kind of define what horsemanship means to you.
First of all, horsemanship means that I think anyone who would call themselves a horseman loves horses. I love every horse I ride, and you know, some of them might test you sometimes, but I think they're the ones that are sometimes you end up having the best connection with, because they have a strong character. You sometimes have a strong character, and I think you can build a bond together that can nearly be unbreakable. And I think a horseman understands each horse individually. There's not one horse and every horse the same. So they all have their individual characters. They all have their individual quirky ways about them that we as people have to understand and work with them, as well as sometimes guiding them a bit more one way or the other. And yeah, I think the biggest thing about being a horseman is understanding the horse that you're dealing with at that time.
Definitely. I feel like you also, thinking about your business and your program, besides your competitive career, you also have a very large breeding and training program. So tell me a little bit about those kind of sectors of your business and why you chose this business model that kind of encompasses, your riding and training and breeding.
Basically, to tell you the truth, at the very start, me with a broken back, my wife riding with her couple of horses, we didn't have a great opportunity to say, right, we'd like to go out and buy two or three fantastic Grand Prix horses. So it was basically up to us to try and find a way to get the good quality into the stable the way we could afford to do it. We didn't have big sponsors or backers. So unfortunately we had to, or fortunately for us, it worked out great. But you know, we started with the breeding. We started buying a couple of nice commercial horses, doing a bit more of a higher level with them, and then passing them on, selling them away, and you know, try to repeat business with good people who we've built up fantastic relationships over the years. And the breeding side of it, I mean, we have probably now 150 horses. It's not for everybody because, you know, you need a lot of land and you need a lot of space, and hands on deck. This is time consuming. But for us, we enjoy the young horses. It's difficult to manage it with the top sport, but it's fun to see a horse loose jump as a 3-year-old, and you think, wow, that horse is something. Then when you make your first jumps on the horse as a 4 or 5-year-old, you think, okay, he still has it. This is it now. This horse production, build a big plan for this horse. We'll really make a good solid plan for him to develop into a hopefully a future star, which it looks like they have the he or she has the capabilities of. A little bit like Zodiac, one of our horses. He's, you know, he's been with us since a foal, and ever since the first jump, he's been an absolute superstar. And he's tested us as a young horse with his character. He was strong-willed as a 4 and 5-year-old, but we were really patient with him. And he more than anything just needed time. And already as an 8-year-old, he jumped double clear, 5-star 160. Jumped. He's won a two 5-star shows this year already. So you know, he's a superstar, and I really think he's going to be a serious horse for the sport also. So that's nice that came from our starting point of one of our first big bunch of young horses that we started with. So at least it doesn't it gives us faith for the years to come anyway.
Yeah, that's so exciting. I'm sure it can
They're
get, I
not
mean,
all going to be superstars, but
right.
there's one or
Yeah.
two.
And it's hard too because I mean, you have the pro side of, you know, having them since they're young, you really get to know them and learn them. You're in charge of how quickly you bring them along, and that's all great. And then obviously the challenge of that is I'm sure it gets hard to be patient. I mean, it's such a long game, right? Before they're, you know, ready and doing, you know, that height. And so yeah, just I feel like you were saying he needed time. And so like I think the part of what makes your program so successful is that you're able to recognize you know, every horse. It's not like it's this cut and dry program of, okay, when they're three, they do this, when they're four, they do this. It really ha you really have to kind of understand each horse as an individual and what they need. And some, especially, you know, sometimes the most talented ones need a little bit of time or a little bit of, you know, specific direction to get to be able to be where they are, to really, you know, showcase it.
But again, that goes back to your last question of being a horseman or horsewoman. You know, it's the same thing. It's understanding the horse you're dealing with and approaching them accordingly.
Yeah. Yep, and doing the best for it. Yeah, definitely.
That's it.
Well, you've been putting in the work in the show jumping world, breaking into the number 33 spot in the Longines rankings recently. This definitely has you vying for a spot representing Ireland in the Olympics this year. Was that always a goal of yours, like this Olympic Games specifically, the Olympic Games in general? Tell me a little bit about kind of your goal setting and how you work back from that.
I'm extremely lucky to have a horse good enough to be in contention.
Yeah.
I have a fantastic horse, Equine America, Consonant de Pure. He's sorry. He's a superstar. He's had unbelievable success over the last 2 years. I bought him off a friend of mine with big goals in mind, and he was actually found in Czech Republic. Ronan Clark was found the horse. Straight away the horse was very careful and showed like he had the quality, but was a bit unique in his style of jumping. His jumped sometimes a bit unorthodox and too high, or crossed his legs, or he'd maybe do things where people would say this, that, or the other. But Ronan is a super horseman and a fantastic spotter of a good horse, great eye for a horse. So he found the horse anyway, and basically I was with him that weekend, and lucky enough for me, he said, yeah, we can buy him or whatever, and I bought the horse, and then we went on, started slowly. Developed up from 2 star to 3 star Nations Cup. He was double clear to winning 3 star Grand Prix, to second and a 4 star, and then obviously into the indoor season this year now, or last 6 months, he was straight away really knocking it out of the park with back to back 5 star World Cup wins. And then, yeah, just unbelievable to have a good horse like that. So the idea of the Olympics now, I think it's great. I fully and would love to go, fully believe I'm entitled to an opportunity to be in with a shout. He jumped, represented Ireland 6 weeks ago, 2 months ago now, sorry, in Abu Dhabi, was double clear there again. I think very impressively. Then he had a break, and now we do we stay quiet, go to Oliva Nova for 2 weeks. He will jump 1 week and then leave for Riyadh for the World Cup finals.
Wow, so exciting.
All right,
The
so we'll see
road.
how that goes.
Yeah, exactly. About 3 years ago, I drew my first sketch of the ponytail hairnet. This all stemmed from having years and years of wearing hairnets, also having long hair, not like that matters, but I often would wear my hair down. I have a
very big head. I have the largest women's same shoot helmet and a ton of hair. So with all that being said, with a lot of photography and modeling with my equestrian style, I just like noticed a few things that just like didn't quite seem right when it came to the current line of hairnets in the market. I really love wearing hairnets. I think it really helps an overall like classic and polished look. But whenever I wore my hair down, I noticed the inevitable blob of hairnet, the extra hairnet that just flops around in your ponytail. And I would try to tuck it in my hair tie, I would try to braid it into my braid, and it just was never quite right. So I decided to take matters into my own hands, and it started a very long journey of getting a design patent and creating a brand new product. And that is my new brand, Ellsworth. Ellsworth is an equestrian accessory brand, and my very first product is the ponytail hairnet. We just launched, and I have been absolutely overwhelmed with the response. You guys love it, and I am so happy because I love it too. What makes it so different is it is not only like softer and durable, and I really love the 6 colors we came out with, but it has the patent pending elastic lined hole at the back of your head. So basically it completely takes away the need for another hair tie. I don't know about you, but I was always that girl growing up, let's be honest, still today, that does not have a hair tie around her wrist, and she is going around tack trunks asking her barn friends for an extra hair tie. Well, with this design, you don't even need a hair tie if you don't want to, because the elastic lined hole at the back of the hairnet acts as your hair tie. But because of this design, what it really does is remove the excess hairnet that flops around in your ponytail. So now you can wear a hairnet and wear your hair down or up. It absolutely works if you want to wear your hair up. But either way, you do not have to worry about the excess hairnet flopping around in your ponytail. So if you would like to take a look at the ponytail hairnets, they come in a pack of 2 for $16.99, and they're available on my website. My website is Ellsworth Official. That's ellsworthofficial.com. The road to the Olympics is obviously long and challenging, and it's definitely a timing game, especially when it comes to our sport. But I feel like it's something that not many people, even equestrians, fully understand. So can you give us a brief overview about how you've been working to get to like where you are in terms of the Olympics and that specific track?
I think not swaying left and right. Sometimes you can have an amazing horse and no opportunity to get into the shows. I'm lucky enough, my horse is competitive, and I have another, obviously, Zodiac, who's a fantastic horse who has brought good results, and Mancini has brought good results, and a bunch of good horses around us that have raised the ranking to, I suppose, bring us into a higher level of show to showcase the showcase that we're able to do it, you know. Right. And then off the back of that, you get all of a sudden you start turning the heads of our team selectors, Michael Blake, or you know the show organizers that might let you into the 5-star shows, and you know all them things are. You need the help of everybody to get to a high level to show and prove that you are good enough to go to a championship. So you are good enough to represent your country. And then at the end of the day, when you're given the opportunity to put your national jacket on your back, it's up to you to perform, and it's up to you to have your horse in good shape to perform well and show that you're good enough to be in contention for an Olympic Games or a championship, you know, and we don't take that lightly. We take it very seriously, and we definitely, if it's something that's achievable, we will absolutely go at it with our sleeves rolled up to try and make it happen to the best of our capabilities. And that goes down to all of the team around me. I've an amazing wife, a great supporter, Sarah Bothwick. She owns half a consulent with me. Mm. And you know, great staff, team staff at home. Toby Parson is a great young lad. He's been with me since he's 14. You know, and he's a great part of our stable. And all these you know, big factors which some people take for granted are huge huge stress relievers. When you know you go away to a show with the 7 and 8 year olds, that your good horses are at home in the best of hands and the best of care, and they're still working through their routines and their programs, and their work doesn't change. Even if you're not there, you're away producing your next bunch of 8 and 9 year olds or 7 year olds or whatever horse, because inevitably you have to stay going every week to keep the next bunch coming through, in my opinion. But yeah, good team around you, good support, clinch your opportunities when you're given them, and hopefully in the end you're not overlooked, and if you deserve to go, you should be able to go, I believe.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, I was just gonna, that's so perfect. I was just gonna ask you about your team. So I love that. I think that that's, you know, obviously such a huge part of your success and you being an important part, but one part of that huge team that really makes it all happen. There's so many moving parts to it.
Yeah, definitely. And again, it's an honor to represent your country. It's something every horseman or woman would be very proud of. But I think anyway, I'm sure everyone says this, but I think particularly the Irish are very, very passionate about the Nations Cups, and you know, they really mean a lot to us all.
Yeah.
So everybody wants to go every week, and you know, so it's tough to get on the teams, and
That's the understatement of the century, especially considering your team is so strong right now.
Yeah, very strong. A lot, obviously, where Ireland is very blessed to have great riders, and they all have great horses. And, you know, I'm lucky to be in amongst the mix of them. I hope I can be up at the top towards the next few months. You know, it's just, it is what it is. And we plan for it, and we're aiming for it. But we have to get the opportunities to showcase ourselves, and a bit of luck as well along the way.
Definitely. What advice would you give to aspiring riders who dream of competing in the Olympics or reaching, you know, the top levels of the sport based on your own journey and experiences? What advice would you give?
Nobody owes you an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
You have to earn your own opportunity, and you have to create a lot of it yourself and work very hard.
Yeah, I think that that's great. I think that's a really important perspective. I think, especially when you start getting a taste of success, especially as you move up the levels, it's so easy to start expecting that and feeling, you know, maybe entitled to certain opportunities. So I think that that's a really great reminder.
Absolutely. And there's one, our sport is an unbelievable leveler, because you know, I don't know what other sport you can win a Grand Prix on a Sunday evening, and you can fall off in a 1 meter on a Monday morning on a younger horse because they spook or whatever. You know, you there is no spiral to success. It's a bumpy road, and I think if you stay motivated, stay hungry, I think every knockback is a lesson. It's not a setback. It's a lesson you learn from, and you go again. And you know, I think that shows a true sports person that can fall and fail and come back to it, and back to the show next week, and you know, roll the sleeves up again and have a good weekend. Every class is not going to be a success. You know, we lose more in this sport than we win. So enjoy the wins, but you know, don't get disheartened when you don't win, because every time you don't win, it doesn't mean it was a negative round. It could just be a building round for the next success of the next show, you know.
What would you say is something that you are passionate about that you feel like the rest of the industry either just doesn't talk a lot about or doesn't know enough about?
I really want to know my horses inside and out, and Not that everybody won't say this, but you know, just to really be a horseman and really understand how much I can ask of the horse. Don't put them in the red too often. But when you feel like you can get that little bit more out of them and they're ready to give it to you, I think that's brilliant to be able to feel that you know, you can ask that bit more and they're ready to give you the results. And then, you know, all of a sudden a horse can overachieve with a partnership, and a rider can maybe overachieve with a horse that wants to fight for them individually. I think it's a bond and a connection between horse and rider. And you know, we can all talk about going really fast or this or that or the other, but inevitably, you know, when you're spinning back to these big fences at full speed, you know, your horse has to have so much faith in you as the rider, and the rider has to have so much faith in the horse to actually take off, or the horse needs to know the rider isn't going to put them in a bad situation. So I think all these things, it's all down to, again, the bond between horse and rider, and the love of the fact that, you know, the love of the horse, always keep that in the back of the head, you know.
Yeah, I think so often. I mean, I think it's easy for, and it's kind of like a maybe like a feel good notion for people to say about the bond and the connection. But I think, I mean, it really, when a horse trusts its rider, it's just so much is so significantly better. I mean, we've been in lots of situations, and I'm sure you have too, where you have a horse, come to you, or a new horse that the bond and the trust isn't there, and they're just, skeptical or stubborn or have a mind of their own, or all of those things. But then when that trust and that bond is created, they're so much more willing to do something that maybe wasn't their first option, but they're doing it just because like you're asking them to do it. And I just think that it's so cool. I always try to tell my clients and my team, like, isn't it so cool that like they don't have to do any of this, and they do it willingly. It's just so amazing.
I do it. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the horses in general, they're absolutely amazing animals, and I think they're just they fight for us, and they want to please us too, as much as we want the result, they want to give it to us, you know. So it's just they're fantastic animals, and we're so lucky to be able to spend time with them and work in an industry that where we love to be. We would probably be there as a sport anyway, but we're able to work with them, so it's fantastic. And you know, they're the real success.
Absolutely. Well, Richard, thank you so much for taking the time. It's so exciting, your life and career right now. So I'm excited to watch you continue to work hard and put in all of that effort and results towards hopefully a very exciting summer.
Thank you very much. Please God, good luck.
All right, that is all I have for you today. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you liked what you heard, please take a minute and write a review on iTunes. I would so appreciate it. It helps people like you find the podcast, and it helps me get some killer guests. Thank you so much, and I will talk to you next week.